Hey, by the way, a federal appeals court has tossed out the $1.8 million in damages awarded to former Minnesota Governor Jesse Ventura, who said he was defamed by the late author Chris Kyle in the best-selling book, The American Sniper. The 8th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals also sent a portion of the case, Ventura's defamation claim, back to the district court for a new trial, saying Ventura's attorneys made improper remarks and the trial court clearly abused its discretion in denying a new trial. So how about that? Well, in a moment, we'll come back with Mary Roach. We'll take your phone calls and continue talking about some of her work. We got to talk about Stiff, The Curious Lives of Human Cadavers as well when we come back. And welcome back to Coast, Mary Roach with us. We're going to get to your calls as well as they line up for you, Mary. Okay, I can't let this one go. Stiff, The Curious Lives of Human Cadavers. What's that all about?
Yeah, you know, well, one of the chapters actually deals with something that I should have. When you asked me before, what's the next big thing? There's something that is in Stiff that I think is probably going to be perfected relatively soon. It's kind of freaky, and that is the total body transplant. I mean, casually people say head transplant, but really what it is, if you're the recipient, you're getting a whole new body. And so instead of getting a heart-lung transplant or a liver, they just like cut you off at the neck, hook up the arteries and the nerves. I mean, the tricky thing here is nobody can reattach spinal nerves yet, so you would just be a head on a pillow with a body, but yeah, you could go on. So and there was in the 70s there was this guy, Dr. White, Robert White, in Cleveland, and he did this with rhesus monkeys, and they survived for a while. They had a lot of rejection issues because the immunosuppressant regimes were nowhere. And now there's been all these advances with like marrow infusion, where you kind of reprogram the immune system of the person.
And stem cells and everything else.
Yeah, they're really getting closer. They've now done the first penis transplant was a few weeks back. They've done arms, and they could do legs. It's getting to the point where they'll be able. You could just swap out, just take your head, stick it on a new body.
It's like Frankenstein, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. Could you imagine? I mean, you wake up, and you've got a whole other body. I mean, you're still you.
If you have your brain and your memory, you're still you.
You're still you.
No matter where they put it.
Exactly. You get this completely new body. So you could be 80 years old, and you could get a 20-year-old body, and you keep going. It's kind of amazing to think about how long you. I mean, if they. You know, they've got to get the whole spinal nerve reconnection thing.
But they may. Down to a science.
And I think that they will, and which would also be great for people.
Well, here's the other thing, too, though. Would you maintain memory? Would you keep memory, or would it go?
No, you'd keep it because you've got your brain, and you've got, you know, I mean.
See, what they're going to do, this is how they'll do it. They'll be able to download your memory onto a chip. And then when they're ready to reprogram the new you, they put it back in.
Well, in that case, you don't even need the whole body transplant. You could just take you out on the little thumb drive and...
Or clone you.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Clone you and then put the memory back in.
You know what I heard? That there's now... I saw this amazing... they're able to, if somebody has a thought, they can actually get a very fuzzy kind of image of like a shape or a form. And so it's just the rudimentary beginnings. But I think eventually you'll be able to record dreams. You'll be able to kind of get a visual image of a thought.
Well, I was going to say, wouldn't that be cool if they had the capability of... projecting your dream onto a screen. So you'd see your dream, but you'd see it. People would be able to see it. You'd be asleep, but there's your dream right there.
It'd be amazing. Because when you tell it, it just loses something.
Videotape it later? How bizarre would that be?
I know. Wouldn't that be something? I think that'll happen. If they're already able to record, simultaneously show, what somebody's imagining, what image. I think we'll be able to do that one day.
All right, let's go to the phones now. We will go to Chuck, truck driving in Georgia. Welcome to the show, Chuck. You're on with Mary Roach.
Oh, good evening.
Hi.
How you guys
Hi,
doing?
Chuck.
Good. Good.
I was calling because you guys were talking about submarines and escaping. Seeing I was in the Navy for 6 years on a submarine, I figured I'd let you know about the stanky hood that you were talking about.
Okay.
And from about 600 feet and above, you can escape with a stanky hood. But
Yep.
you got to understand, you on a submarine, you have what they call an EAB, emergency breathing apparatus, so that
Yep.
you've got this mask on and you're plugged into a manifold so that you have oxygen to breathe, even if the submarine is flooding. And then
Right.
to escape, you put this hood on and you get into the escape trunk. And now you've got to flood the escape trunk to equal the water pressure. Otherwise, you'd never be able to open that hatch
Right.
if you
Exactly.
got the weight of the water on it. So you've got to flood it and equalize the pressure. Well, the air that's in your stanky hood and in your lungs is at that depth. So when you come out, that air begins to expand. As you rise through the water, the air in your hood and the air in your lungs is expanding.
Can't you get an embolism that way?
Well,
You
you
got to
could, but the idea
exhale.
behind it is that what they do is they train you to, you have to constantly scream, you're exhaling. They teach you to yell like a Santa Claus, ho, ho, ho.
Get those bubbles out of your system, right?
Right, to continue to exhale the air out of your lungs. And once you've
Did
gone
you
out
go
of
through
the
the
air,
training?
emptied your lungs, your stanky hood is expanding, which fills your mask full of air so that you can take another breath. And then you begin to yell, ho, 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 again to keep exhausting the air because that air continues to expand till you get to the surface. So
Yep.
you've got air to breathe, and by the time you reach the surface, you're traveling at about 45, 50 mile an hour. You clear that water by a good 4 or 5 feet. I mean, you come shooting out of the water like a bobber. You ever pulled a fish bobber underwater and you watch it pop up? That's the way you come up. And you
Yeah.
come up and land on the surface. And that becomes
Yeah.
the stanky hood becomes your life, basically your life preserver. Your life
Yeah,
belt.
I saw people going through the training over at Groton. They have a big giant tower, and they, you go through, and I'm always up at the top. You see, they do. They pop right out of the water. It's amazing. Did you go through it?
He just hung up, so
Oh, he did.
but man, I wouldn't
Anyway.
want to leave a submarine at 600 feet, but if you have to, you have to, right?
No, he's right. And the golden rule, like he said, is don't hold your breath. You gotta
Even when you're
exhale and
scuba diving, you don't hold your breath. Same
Oh yeah,
thing.
right. Yeah. That's bad news. They used to just to put the fear into the students, they would take a wine bag, like from a box of wine, they take that bag and they'd at the bottom, they put a little air in it, and then they'd let it go, and it would come up, and just as it got to the top, it would burst, and they'd say, "Yeah, well, that could be your lung, so make sure to exhale."
You've done some work on killer bees. They have fascinated me. Are they in the United States yet?
They crossed over into Texas some years back. When I did that story, what was it was about, boy, maybe even 15 years ago or more. And they were just crossing over. I was down near Brownsville, Texas, and they were coming over. And I haven't heard much about them. I mean, they're not going to make it to the cooler climates, but they were crossing over. And they were. I mean, I was there when they were clearing out a big old hive. And the thing with killer bees, the more they have to protect, the bigger the hive, the more aggressive they are. The venom is the same, but they will keep on stinging and keep on stinging, and they will come after you. A regular honeybee won't do that, but these bees will.
Will a wasp hive attack you?
Well, a wasp Not in the same, not with the same persistence, I don't think, as the
Because
persistence.
listen to this, there's a guy, I think he was in Arizona. He was on his bicycle going through, the scenic route and doing his thing.
Yeah.
And he was with his girlfriend, and he gets attacked by 1,000 bees, and they sting him to death. He dies. Now,
Yeah.
what bee would come at you with 1,000 bees? What kind of bee would do that?
Killer bees.
A
Killer
killer
bees.
bee.
If you went close to a hive, and the hive that I was near was, it was a 50-gallon drum full of bees and the honey and the stuff that they wanted to protect it. So we got close to it, and it was like being inside a giant blender full of raisins, and somebody hits frap. They're just hitting us, and like you could hear them hitting you, and we had bee suits on because it was, there were researchers, and they were, coming to clear this thing. But there definitely had to be 1,000 bees there, and when you take off, they pursue you more, much more. They're much more aggressive, and the people that die, it's usually because they. It maybe it's an animal or somebody who can't run away quickly, or you fall and you can't get up, and then you get enough of the venom in you to kill you. So because
And they attack in droves, don't they?
and if you go in water and you try to stay under and then just come up and take an air, they'll keep coming at you and they'll sting your face, and they're very persistent. They're very persistent.
Mean.
Mean, yeah, mean. Very defensive, angry.
Is it all out to protect the queen?
Well, it's to protect the hive with the queen, yeah, and
I
the
think it's the
resources
queen,
of the
though.
hive.
Yeah. I mean, the hive is
Yeah.
the queen, isn't it?
The hive is the queen. The queen is everything.
Yeah.
Just like the
Henry
queen.
in North Hollywood, California. Hello, Henry. Welcome to the program.
I was wondering, when you were writing Grunt, did you happen to hear any of the senior leadership, like high-level officers, refer to enlisted people as kids? I constantly hear these dirty stories about how the upper command just views the people coming out of basic as kids.
Kids? KIDS? Kids.
Kids, yeah.
I don't remember hearing that, but I would believe it just because a lot of them are teenagers still.
They are
But
kids.
I didn't hear it per se, no.
We've had a lot of young people in our military, that's for sure. I even remember stories of World War II where some kids in their 15, 16s tried to sneak into the military as well.
Oh yeah. Yeah, well, and then there's the
Thanks,
child
Henry.
soldiers in Africa, which is a really chilling thing. Those are literally kids.
When you were writing Grunt, for you, what was the favorite subject? Don't tell me it was the maggots.
What I found fascinating was the penis transplant was pretty amazing,
I bet
because
you
I was
did.
there for
Now, don't get graphic on me.
Oh, all
This
right.
is a family radio show.
Okay. But it's so late at night, George.
That's okay. I have my old school scruples.
Okay. All right. Well, penis is in the dictionary. It's not a dirty word, but I won't go there.
It's not a dirty word if it's used biologically. If
I know, but I would use it no other
you
way.
use it some other way, then it is. But we
No,
can move
I know.
on.
I was only going to use it biologically.
Well, just
Anyway, I was in a they were it was a cadaver lab where they were working out some of the details about which arteries do we need to hook up, because there was one in China in 2006 and it didn't work, and they had to cut it off after 2 weeks because they hadn't hooked up the right arteries.
what
So
about,
anyway,
you've heard about chimeras, right? You don't,
chimeras.
you know what they are?
Chimeras.
They are using animal and human mixing up of DNA and everything else.
Oh, a chimera, Chimera.
Yeah,
Yes.
chimeras.
Yeah,
And
yeah.
what an abomination would you create with something like that?
Oh, do you remember there was this guy, Ivanov, I believe was his name, and this was in the Soviet era, And he did a lot of work with hybrids like mules or zedonks, which is a zebra and a donkey. And Ivanov tried to mix a human and a chimp.
And what did he get?
He didn't get anywhere. Was it
a stillborn or something?
No, you know, I don't even think that there was a birth. He was artificially inseminating the women with, and I don't think it took. But anyway, Ivanov was his name, and they were, the rumor was, although I didn't find any substantiation for this, the rumor was that Stalin supported it because he wanted to make the perfect soldier.
Well, Hitler definitely would have supported it, that's for sure.
Yeah, for sure. You know, five times as strong, without the ethics, you know, tireless, kind of low intelligence, etc.
Will do whatever he was ordered to do.
Yeah. But anyway,
let's go to James. James in Ontario. Go ahead, James.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
Good.
Yeah, she was mentioning about traveling to Mars earlier and the moon. Well, I would certainly go to the moon, too.
Would you go to Mars?
Well, if they ever invented anything that, like fusion, that would, like, break the light during
get you there faster. But you wouldn't go for a six-year round trip, would you?
I would never go for, like, be away from Earth for like more than a year. I would never do that.
And definitely not one way.
That's a good chunk of your lifetime.
Yeah. I mean, that's absolutely true. Thanks, James. I mean, I agree with you. I wouldn't do it. As much as it would be an incredible, incredible sight to see, walking on the red planet, stumbling across things, maybe going to Cydonia and seeing if that's really a face or what. That would be so cool, but then what? I want to come home, Mary.
I know. You want to feel the sun and smell the flowers. Even being in Antarctica, I remember I went down there to do a story years and years ago. National Science Foundation had a program where you could go down, and these guys were telling me they'd spent the whole season in Antarctica, and it's pretty, there's nothing, it's just white, there's not a lot to see, and it's only researchers, nobody lives down there, and they describe coming out of there and going to New Zealand, and they're walking down the street and they're just looking at the flowers, and then suddenly they look across the street and it's a woman pushing a stroller, and they look at each other and go, a baby, and they run across the street, and the woman looks at them, like turns the stroller and runs.
Jeez.
But you're really deprived of all the things.
Mary's website is maryroach.net, and where do you get your books, Mary?
Oh gosh, anywhere, bookstores, online.
What's the next one you're working on?
I don't know.
Taking a little break?
I'll do some magazine work. I'm not sure what the next one is.
All right, well, stay with us. We're going to come back and take some final phone calls with you in just a moment here on Coast to Coast AM. On our next Coast to Coast program, Steve Quayle joins us with some incredible stories, followed by our open lines on Coast to Coast AM, so make sure you're part of that show. And welcome back to Coast, our final segment with Mary Roach as we talk about the things she's worked on and some other strange things as well. Mary, were you interested in the weird and unusual when you were a little girl?
No, I was not really. I was kind of a, you know, little, there were some hints, I suppose, that I was not your typical little girl. I remember I wasn't big on dolls. And somebody gave me a Barbie doll, and the thing that I would do with it, and this was, I think I was 5 or 6 years old, I would pull off the head, and I would tell myself, you've got 5 seconds to put the head back on or she dies.
Oh my God.
But, you know, with the 5 seconds, if you could put a head back on, that's about how much time you have. So it was kind of a foreshadowing, perhaps, of my future career.
You were a weird little girl, weren't you?
I guess I was a little bit strange, perhaps. Perhaps, yeah. My father was 65 when I was born, so my parents were not your typical parents.
Were they into the unusual, too?
My dad was an interesting character. You know, he wasn't. He was a colorful dude. He would hitchhike, which would drive my mother crazy. You know,
did he have a car?
He did, but if the car wasn't working, he would just hitchhike down to the general store to get the paper or whatever.
Whatever, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he wasn't a weirdo, but he was definitely eccentric, I would say. My mom was, yeah, she was...
pretty straight?
She was, but, well, you know, but then I have these memories sometimes. I remember her coming up to me as a kid, and she's like, she's holding a daddy long legs, and she goes, watch, and she pulls a leg off the...
No!
Yeah.
In front of you, a little girl?
Yeah. Is that an odd thing? It's
that's,
an odd
that's
thing.
Weird.
Pretty straight otherwise.
Lucky you didn't end up being a serial killer or something.
That's true, I know.
That we know of.
There's still time.
That's right. No. Who am I interviewing anyway? Let's go to first-time caller, Hardy in Birmingham, Alabama. Hello, Hardy. Thanks for calling.
Hey, George. How you doing,
good.
Mary?
Hey.
10 years ago, I had two heat exhaustions, and my sweat glands have shut down 90%. Now, a few seconds of sunlight on my head makes me horribly disoriented and dizzy, and I've been to all kind of doctors, been to Vanderbilt Autonomic Nerve Center, and they say my autonomic nerve system has been knocked off balance, and they call it dysautonomia. And I'm a performing musician, and I've had to do everything at night for the last 10 years. Did you learn anything about how to cure a heat exhaustion, heat-related incident? I feel like the sun is trying to kill me.
Wow, so your sweat glands have shut. That is a, there's some people who are born with a, or, you know, who can't sweat.
I've never heard of that. That's weird.
Yeah, no, and if you can't sweat, you're in trouble when it gets hot. I mean, you have to cool yourself.
Yeah, that's right. You're going to cook from within.
Right, you've got to get into cold water. You've got to take some sort of artificial means because your body can't do it. And sweat is the way we cool ourselves, you know. I mean, and most animals don't do that, but we do. That's, I mean, we don't pant, we sweat. So you're in a world of hurt when you can't sweat. So you're down to 10%.
10%. That's that's pretty dangerous.
I don't know of any treatment for that, but I do know that's a serious condition, and heat stroke can kill you. So.
Hardy, take care of yourself, my friend.
Yes.
I mean, but you know what? You take it for granted. You don't think about stuff like that.
No, that's exactly right. I read this big book on human perspiration by this Japanese guy who studied sweat and thermoregulation for years, and he talked about it. To him, like, sweat was being able to sweat. This is the reason why we conquered the world, that the tropics. We can survive there because we have this amazing thermoregulatory system. And he spoke with great scorn about people who complained about being sweaty. And he said, and if you just wait, if you can't sweat, you would welcome it. You would come to appreciate your sweat glands and your sweat, and you wouldn't complain about stinky, sweaty. You know, it seemed to be it was a point of great annoyance.
Mary, you remember the James Bond movies? And
yes, with the gold.
And Q, right? Q would be in his laboratory doing his thing, right?
Yes.
Do you
yes.
think we have something like that, where they're coming up with some really bizarre gizmos and gadgets and stuff like that?
I think there's always labs like that. Oh, I mean, when I was the OSS, you know, the precursor to the CIA, they had this... The gadget guys, they came up with, you know, like collapsible motorcycles and tree climbers and smatchets this was a good one, ashless paper, so you could burn something and it would show, there'd be no ash. Just the list goes on and on, and all the files are there in the National Archives of all the gadgets that they came up with, and little tiny, God, they have this great little, I want some of these, little cufflinks. Where you pop it open and there was a compass inside.
Ooh.
And a little pocket incendiary.
You like that stuff.
Yeah.
Were you a tomboy?
Yeah.
I knew it.
Yeah, I was a tomboy, absolutely, yeah.
Did you play baseball and sports and stuff too?
Not so much, but I was, you know, when summer would come, I my neighbors and I, we would take off our shoes and we'd go barefoot the whole summer. We wanted to be like George Ely, was that his name? Tarzan. In the beginning shots of Tarzan, this was the 70s. He's running
George
across
Reeves.
The rocks. Was it?
His name was George Reeves.
No, Ron Ely was the TV
guy. Oh, he was another one. He came later.
Yeah, he was the TV guy. But the guy would run everywhere barefoot over the rocks.
Well, the first TV guy was George Reeves.
Okay, I believe you.
Yeah.
Yeah. This was that was before the 70s. My guy was, what, 70?
And he died tragically. He got shot.
He did?
May have shot himself. I can't remember. But, yeah, that was a sad story. Superman, I remember. Superman got killed.
Wow.
It's not supposed
to
happen.
George Reeves. It was George Reeves before it was Christopher Reeve.
Yeah. Let's go to Phil in San Francisco. Hi, Phil. Go ahead.
Hi, George. Hi, Mary. Good morning. You mentioned earlier that science has the ability to grasp images from people's thoughts, maybe some kind of crude image, and maybe we have the potential to tap into somebody's memories and download it onto a chip. Well, do you think sometime in the near future that we'll be able to tap into the brains of dead people to get their final last memories so they can be used in murder trials, or maybe just to get their last thoughts and memories for loved ones, or maybe to see what's the last thing that goes through their mind, whether it's a deity leading them on to the next world, a spirit guide, or whatever.
There's a movie there, Phil. Great story.
I'll take my answer.
Yeah.
Geez,
well,
think of that, Mary.
Yeah.
To be
yeah,
able to tap into somebody, let's say they got murdered, and you could tap into them and actually see what's happening.
There was some, God, I remember hearing something about you would, I can't remember if it was science fiction or where I read it, but you could, they would look at the retina and they'd be able to see the last image that the person saw before they died. It was probably some science fiction I read, but they take, it was almost like it was a Polaroid photograph, and they would be able to sort of develop the last image on the retina and see what who the person was looking at. I thought that was
well. You heard stories too of people who have had donor body parts, and
yes,
they pick up the personality of the person who once owned the body parts.
That does happen. The people, yeah, I remember in Stiff, I talked to Mehmet Oz before Dr. Oz became Dr. Oz. He was a heart transplant surgeon, and he said he would hear stories from people. Like this guy said, I know who this heart came from, an African American woman, and I know how she died, and she was eating French fries. And he had this whole story, and Dr. Oz was so
mesmerized by it.
Yeah, and then he went back and looked, and in fact, it was some middle-aged white guy. But nonetheless, it's a common belief, and that somehow, and people will report after the transplant liking a different kind of music or having a different outlook
yeah.
on life. And I mean, they, yeah.
Things change. Mark's in Detroit. Hey, Mark. Good morning to you.
Hey. Good morning, George.
Good morning,
Mary. How are you?
Hi, Mark.
I'm good. Thank you. I like to, and what's happening, Tony? I mean, Tommy. Thanks.
Tommy's back there. Yeah.
Yeah. I like to ask you about the Asian wasp, which migrated from China into Japan. And it's a black wasp with like orange stripes. And it's bigger than the average killer bee and honeybee, like 2 or 3 inches. And when it stings you once, you can die. It has enough potency of venom to kill you with one sting, and which is migrating all over Japan and a lot of those areas over that way. And I'd like to also ask you about the swarm of locusts that's up in Russia. Do you have any insight towards that?
All right, well, let's talk about the Asian wasp, first of all. What do we know about that thing, Mary?
I don't know anything about the Asian wasp. Wow, this is relatively new development?
We have to check in. No, I think it's been around for a long time. Or locusts in Russia? Have you heard about that? Sounds biblical, doesn't it?
It doesn't, yeah. No, I didn't know. I didn't. I remember hearing about them in North Africa, but I didn't know they were there. No.
We'll do a
is
little,
it the swarm that's underway now?
Do a little homework into both of those. Those are fascinating.
Yeah, other than the killer bees, I have not reported on.
How big is a killer bee?
It's the same. It looks like a honeybee.
It does. Yeah,
and the venom is the same. It's just the behavior. They're very nasty.
About the size of a dime, I guess, right?
Yeah, honeybees are the size of a kind of a a honeybee. It's smaller than a wasp.
Are their stingers big?
The stingers are, they're not big. They're, you know, a millimeter or something. They're little tiny things. Little tiny things.
Are they so treacherous because they attack in mass?
They're treacherous because they're very they attack in mass and they're persistent. They will follow you and keep after you and keep sting and they'll keep going.
They
don't stop. A regular honeybee will just get you away from the area and that's fine. They just want you to back off.
Is it true that if a bee stings you, leaves the stinger in you, it dies?
I think it is, yes. I think that's true.
Why would it die? Just because the stinger is gone. Maybe it's connected to the rest of the body.
That's a good question. That's a good question. You know what? One time I went to this place where they, if you're allergic to bees, you know, they inject you with that, like a allergy shot.
It's almost like adrenaline or something.
Yeah, this woman's job was to milk the venom out of this little tiny sack of honeybee venom. She sat there all day kind of milking the honeybee.
Jeez.
The venom. Yeah.
Rusty's in Arizona. Welcome to the show. Hi, Rusty.
Hey, how you doing, George?
Good. Thank you.
Good. Follow up on your submariner guy question.
Okay.
I'm a diving instructor, public safety officer, so on. And if he's down at 600 feet, you've got 19 atmospheres of pressure on the person's body. And what that translates to is that a single bubble of air will expand 19 times its size at that depth when it gets to the surface. So, and then popping out of the water as fast as he does, you're going to have all kinds of embolism activity. Bubbles are going to swell up.
Oh, my God, yeah. And you panic, too, I would assume.
Yeah, and the hood that they're talking about, unless that has some type of exhaust valve built into, it's going to explode before it gets to the surface because everything is condensed. So if you have an 18-inch diameter beach ball on the surface and you take it down to 600 feet, you've got 19 atmospheres of pressure because surface level is one atmosphere of pressure. Then every 33 feet past that is another atmosphere.
Hey, Rusty, I'm PADI certified.
Awesome. Awesome.
But I gotta do it. I haven't been out in a while. Do you have to get recertified after a while?
No, but what you need to do is go through a refamiliarization class. Your certification's good basically forever. What your logbook does, though, is that's like a pilot's logbook.
Yeah.
Shows their currency and hours and so forth. And what you need to do is hook up with an instructor somewhere that can just take you down and do a refresher. You know, a couple of dives, go through all the skill drills and so on.
Yeah, take the mask off, breathe that way and stuff like that. That was the toughest for me.
Yeah.
Putting it back on and stuff. Thanks, Rusty.
Take care.
Ever scuba dive, Mary?
I did. Yeah, I did. I did a resort course once.
It's fun.
Yeah.
It's weird, though, when you come across stuff. I came across a car down in the bottom of a lake. I got certified at Lake Norfolk in Arkansas. So it's kind of a murky lake, not pristine.
Diving
like
in Arkansas.
Yeah, that's where I got my certification. Let's go to Ed in Pennsylvania. Hey, Ed, welcome to the program.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, Eddie.
Yeah, I spent a year in Panama as a soldier, and I have a lot of experience with killer bees or Africanized bees. And I just wanted to chime in a little bit. Have you ever been around, like, at the pool or something like that where you had a trash can and there were honeybees hovering around?
Yeah, I've seen that. Yep.
Yep. Okay. That's the same way that killer bees act. They are not aggressive. They are aggressive when they are in numbers. one killer bee will not be very aggressive, but when they are in numbers, they are aggressive. They're aggressive when you get near their hive or when they're swarming. I came to a hive one time in the jungle, and I saw the bees, and I started yelling out bees, and we had an entire platoon of army run away because despite snakes and everything else, they're pretty much the most dangerous thing that you're going to encounter.
They sure, and they hurt.
Like your speaker said, the toxin is not any different than a honeybee, but when you meet them in numbers, they will. It's very, very dangerous.
Yeah, sure.
One time, I have an interesting story. One time,
I won't have time for it. I got to sign off, but call me during open lines one night, would you?
Yes, I will.
That would be great. Thanks. Appreciate it. And Mary, thank you for being on the program. Appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks so much for having me, George.
Okay, Mary Roach, and a website linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasaur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Morales, and George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.